On August 25, 2025, President Duma Boko declared a national public health emergency. This followed warnings from the health ministry earlier in August that hospitals and clinics were running out of essential medicines and medical supplies. Consequently, non-urgent emergencies were suspended. Now, to get what's really the feel on the ground, I am joined by Latoya Bonsi, and she is a qualified bachelor of doctor assistants. Good afternoon, Latoya, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. Good afternoon to the Namibian people. Super glad to be here.
Of course. It's always a pleasure to have you right here with us on Eagle FM. You know that, right?
I do.
Okay, cool. Latoya, thank God you are in the medical field. Just kind of give us a highlight of where it all kind of started. Not, of course, from the very, very beginning of the onset of things, but just run about when medical personnel started noticing something is not so right. And, of course, leading up to the president declaring a public health emergency right there in your country.
Right. Thank you once again. For the past 2 years, I've been in one of the district hospitals in the country. I don't think it's best if I note it, if I mention it. But when we noticed that things started getting a bit tricky was when the Trump administration came into office. So if you can recall, after that happened, immediately after the Trump administration came in, he was very quick, or they were very quick to withdraw the funds and the aid to a lot of countries, a lot of African countries. Yeah. And Botswana was one of them. We heavily relied on U.S. aid on top of our own diamonds, because one thing we know, or one thing that's very well known about our country, is that we heavily rely on the quality diamonds that come up from our ground. Yeah. Now, the issue then became, you know, the whole rise of the synthetic diamonds, that the market wasn't exactly the same anymore, and our economy wasn't exactly, you know, doing just as well. So I would say towards the end of, right around the whole Trump administration and this rise, and just shortly after our president was elected into his space, into his office, he faced a lot of those challenges, because as the previous regime was handing over, the synthetic diamonds began being very popular and our economy began to suffer. So because of that, we started noticing a very small trickle in our the efficiencies in the funds and in the medications. So we would start noticing the delay in the procurement of certain medications, until it got really bad, to the point where even, you know, something as basic as paracetamol, you know, your basic, your basic analgesic, and it became very difficult. And as time went on, just as you mentioned rightly, that beginning of this month, even non-elective or non-emergency procedures had to be sort of put on hold, which was kind of scary, because it made us wonder, okay, well, if this is the case, then where do we stand? And I started realizing it as well, because I was in the clinics at some point, apart from the major district hospital. And even in the clinics, we noted how hypertensive medication was starting to run low. How we'd need to switch to, you know, alternatives. But it became very inconveniencing. But we could live with it. You know, you can live with being given an alternative. You can live with just taking the nearest thing.
Correct.
But it got really bad. And we are so appreciative of the fact that our president is a very proactive man. He is a very, very intellectual. He notices and he has very good counsel. And because of that, he was able to act very briskly. And he even said, if you could follow his Facebook page, he even said that he is being being unapologetic in this, in standing up because of this emergency, because that's what it was. It is an emergency. We were starting to be very concerned when we couldn't get, you know, your basic normal saline that you need for day-to-day operations. Had to start switch to, you know, different alternatives, suture packs, stuff that you really require for a hospital to run and for clinics to run. And mind you, this is we're not even talking like private institutions. This is your government, your public institutions that the people of Botswana are looking onto, because one of the primary cornerstones that the president stands for is that everyone should have access to basic health. Every single person, every single citizen, you know, should have quality health care. And I love how he was so quick to, you know, mobilize the necessary funding from different stakeholders. And we can see how swift he's taking this. Just this Monday, the 25th, when he announced it, immediately they were starting to do the necessary things. And they're starting to you know, advance it and spread the medications that have already been acquired to the farthest of places. Because we know that it's when such issues arise, it's the rural areas that get the hardest hit.
Yeah,
not just, you know, the cities and the towns, but it's the rural areas. And one of his main points, or one of his main things, is that take everything even to the farthest of the farthest, because that's where they're probably suffering the most. They cannot go anywhere else. They're relying on those small clinics that are next to them. And, you know, I'm so glad that he was so quick this is the president we prayed for. This is the president we fasted for. And we're so glad that he is doing the rightful thing and standing up for the healthcare of Botswana. So yeah, I'll just hand over to you to continue.
Yeah, right. Okay. You've given us a lot there, and I really appreciate that. Now, of course, in a move to address the immediate crisis, and you've also rightly mentioned, the Botswana government has rolled out a series of emergency measures. Now, one of them, or including one of those, is the establishment of a Health First Botswana Partnership Fund. Now, I just want to ask, in terms of, the president being the first of his kind to go bold and publicly declare, a state of emergency in terms of obviously shortage of essential medicines. Now, one thing you might not know, Latoya, is that the case study of Botswana, and I'm using it as a case study now, is very familiar to what we are experiencing right here in our own borders of Namibia. Now, but your president go out and declared publicly to the world, and of course, this will also draw criticism. What does that say about the whole scenario to you, Latoya?
Okay, the different ways that I could look at that. First of all, being, we require, out of every leader, we require one that is bold enough to be vulnerable. And that is what he decided to do. He was bold enough to be vulnerable enough to take the situation out and cry out for his people. And that's exactly what he did. He was not, you know, a lot of leaders in this time are so interested in that ego and that pride, even though they're not leading themselves, they're leading a people. They have been chosen for a people. And in certain instances, it's so important for you to rise up and do that which is best for the people who have chosen you, for the people who you're supposed to be leading. And he was vulnerable enough to come up and say, listen, we're crying out because we have the situation and it's bad. And we're not even just crying out for the sake of crying out. We're not crying out because we're helpless, but we're crying out with a plan and a strategy. And that strategy involved him literally just going out and securing the right partnerships for this fund to be created and to be made. And you said, rightly so, that being the first person to the first of his kind to make such a fund just means something. It means that we as a country are going somewhere. And, you know, that kind of vision is exactly what we require. And you mentioned that, Namibia is also in that position. I would say even other African countries are yet to catch up in the sense that we have been heavily reliant on, you know, the Western funds and the Western this and the Western that. And I'm so, it might sound crazy, but with what Trump did has made us, has been sort of a blessing in disguise. I'm not sure who mentioned this. I don't quite remember. But they said that this helps us. It was one of the presidents. I'm not sure if it was the president of Burkina Faso. When he mentioned that this has given us the opportunity to rise up for ourselves. Because you cannot rise up when you are comfortable.
Okay.
You cannot rise up when you are, you know, being given what you require. When there's a lack such as this one, you then stand up and rise. And one of the ways that we can do that for not just health is when we decide to now manufacture our own medication. Because, you know, it starts from like our own skill set.
Yeah.
Fixing our own skill set and like building our own skill set. Because where we're going, we need to be sustainable. And Africa is so rich. African countries are so rich. It's just that we haven't been able to harness the power that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And with leaders such as the Honorable Boko, he has been showing us how we have that ability within us. And we just need those leaders, those steps,
mm-hmm.
those people to push us in the right direction, those people with their minds to take us where we need to go, because manufacturing is going to be a very big thing that we need to do in order to stand for ourselves.
Okay.
And I'm so glad that he did mention that as well, that at some point we're going to have to go into manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you start having those discussions, it opens our minds. It broadens us to what we can truly attain and what we can do. And I believe that even with your president, she's a very... I don't even know where to start with her. She's an amazing president. And I believe that the mind that our president has is the mind that she has as well.
Mm.
And this vulnerability done by our president brought forward, it gives other presidents the courage and the strength and the mind to open up and see, okay, what else can we do? Because if this is where they are, we are going to be there as well.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for us? It means that, you know, the preparations can be done even in the sidelines or even in the background. And, you know, we start having those thoughts and those discussions. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, lastly, before I do let you go, of course, President Duma Boko has been talking about economic diversification in an aim to reduce Botswana's dependency on diamonds. Now, his vision also includes new investment in solar energy, digital technology, tourism, agriculture, mining, and even cybersecurity. Earlier this month, a $12 billion investment deal was signed with Qatar's AR Mansour Holdings to help drive this transformation. Now, just earlier this month, this bill was signed, and then you guys are experiencing this. What do you think about that?
I think that I don't know if I should say perfect timing, because if this is happening just after we have made such partnerships, it means that we can be cushioned in a way. And with that investment and that diversification, it means that with this fund then created, the funds that will be generated not from the money that we've received, but the projects that are being sponsored to support, or projects that are being funded to be brought up, when those begin to yield fruit, or when that diversification begins to take root and sprout out, this fund will still be existing. This fund it'll still be existing, and we won't have issues like this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad that even though it might seem like an issue or a convenient thing, I just think that we are then cushioned in a way. And, you know, there's hope. And this fund does empower us. Sorry, the partnership that was made does empower us, and it shows our partners how proactive we are when it comes to putting our nation first and catering to its needs. So if a fund or the partnerships have been made and there's a need that arises, it shows that, you know, we're not quick to feed our bellies, but we're quick to attend to our nation even during this time.
Yeah.
So as we diversify, thank God we have these partnerships, we are then empowered to be better, to be more, and to be able to sustain ourselves where we're going. And I think it's a convenient blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that, you know, all those funds will be going to that because they have their designated projects, but it just shows how in this time we got the help that we needed.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Yeah. Mathia, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. I do appreciate your insights and your time with us. And of course, I can only hope for the best for the citizens of Botswana.
Yes, we also hope the very best. And we are so glad because then we can now stand as, you know, as proud Botswana during this time. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for this discussion. I hope the minds of the Namibians have been opened up to what is out there for the third country as not as well as ours. So yeah, thank you so much for this.
Sure. Now, of course, there you had it from Latoya Batsi. She is a Botswanan citizen. And not only that, she knows what's going on in terms of the health fraternity because she's also right-based and has been doing her studies right there. Now, of course, let's pause right here. This is on the Reader News Analysis. We're still discussing the same thing. Back when we come back, we'll still continue. Let's take a break and we'll see you right after.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. And one of the root causes of the situation on ground in Botswana has been, of course, a supply chain collapse. The central medical stores responsible for procurement failed to deliver, leaving gaps in critical emergencies and supply. And of course, as you have had Latoya explaining to us, economic strain from diamond market downturn. Botswana's heavy reliance on diamond exports, which once accounted for roughly a quarter of the gross domestic product, one third of government revenue, and 80% of exports, has become a liability. A prolonged slump in global demand has sharply constrained national coffers. Also, cuts in U.S. aid, significant reductions in funding, particularly under PEPFAR, the U.S. President's emergency plan for AIDS relief, and through the Global Fund have weakened critical health programs, including HIV and AIDS treatment efforts. And not only that, corruption and price inflation has been one of the root causes also, as the Central Medical Stores was accused of inflated prices. Some medicines were marked up to 5 to 10 times original cost, and a presidential task force has then found discrepancies, and with the medical stores quoting 705 million pula for the year's medication needs, while a separate assessment priced the same at under 80 million pula. Now, the health ministry reported owing approximately 1 billion pula to private health supplies, exacerbating shortages. Now, we've reached out to economist Charles Kakuru. Let's now take a listen to that conversation and also better understanding what is on ground. Good afternoon, Charles Kakuru, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon to you once more, and good afternoon to the listeners.
Now, of course, the government of Botswana has rolled out a series of emergency measures following President Duma Boko's declaration of a national public health emergency. But before we get into those measures, Charles Kakuru, as an economist, now one of the reasons or the root causes of this emergency is one of is economic strain from diamond market downturn, plus also corruption and price inflation. But let's get into the Botswana's heavy reliance on diamond exports. Just how is it unreasonable? Maybe that's the wrong term to use. Or why do we need to caution any government on relying on one particular item for exports and to generate and to obviously contribute to GDP?
First of all, thank you very much for the call once more. First of all, I would like to say that if you look across SADC itself, it's quite very unfortunate to say to see the state of decline in terms of service delivery as a result of many other factors. So it's not something that we would like to see. It's not only in Botswana, but it's happening almost the entire SADC country, so to say. If you may, which is a fact, recall that Botswana is one of the world's leading producers of diamonds by value. It exports roughly contributes to approximately around a third, if I'm not mistaken, of its national budget, and most of it, you know, foreign currency earnings. So across most of the Southern African countries, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of its manifestos, whether you politically and so forth and so on, economically, there has been the song in terms of saying we need to diversify our economy. And I remember quite very well when he took over, even during campaigns, and when he took over as a president, that has been, you know, one of the messages that he delivered to say to diversify Botswana's economy. So that, you know, beyond diamonds is something else. So with that itself, it's quite very unfortunate that the diamond industry across the globe, there is a downturn in terms of all the diamond demand due to, you know, the emergence of synthetic diamonds. So that has itself has contributed to the revenue and as well as the demand for rare diamonds, you know, and so forth and so on. But and plus, including many other factors like the wars. Most of the uptake is through Israel. Israel has got issues. In the United States, we have got the issue of tariffs and so forth and so on, as well as the other issues that is affecting Russia, which is one of the, you know, diamond key markets. So that itself, in terms of its budget deficits, as a result of declining diamond sales, has contributed to, you know, the provision of services in many other sectors, not only in the health sector, but it could be extended to education as well. So its lack of diversification in terms of our, you know, economy that is contributing to some of this. But also, I think the issue of, if you look at quite very well, I think if you look across the SADC country in terms of their national budget expenditure,
yeah,
first is education. And then it's followed by health. If you look at South Africa, Botswana, Namibia, this is where they spend. But it's quite very unfortunate that despite these, you know, massive, you know, spendings in these key sectors, less is, you know, to be desired in terms of the outcomes. So it gives us, you know, a question is, what is happening internally within those sectors, within those ministries, for example, in terms of the health services sector? Is the issue of procurement. So these are some of the things that we need to interrogate to ensure why is the lack of sales provision despite budget, you know, higher budget allocations. So we wouldn't say, but in terms of the entire supply chain itself, if you look at the private sector supply chain in terms of the health services, it's working. I don't think that's quite different from the public service. There are some loopholes, perhaps, that needs to be closed, but I don't think it necessarily is the issue of government allocation, but it's the issue of we need to investigate the supply chain itself and see to it that what are the issues that are leading to the issue of lack of service delivery. But I don't think it's, you know, necessarily the issue of budget allocation, or it's the issue of, you know, revenue drop or the GDP drop, and that's contributing to there are mechanisms in terms of how, you know, in terms of the budget deficits, how governments can be able to fund and support, you know, through, you know, that budget deficit.
Now, let's talk about something that hits closer to home as well, corruption and price inflation. Now, the Central Medical Stores was accused of inflated prices. Some medicines were marked up to 5 to 10 times its original price. And the Presidential Tax Force found disparities with 705 million puller for 1 year's medical needs, while a separate assessment priced the same at under 80 million puller. Now, that's a huge gap. And this is something that, of course, we've also seen happening with our own health system. Just how perhaps can the government combat such situations, and just what needs to be done, economist Charles Kakuru?
With regards to that, especially coming back home here, a couple of months back, if I'm not mistaken, last month, we received, our president received the counterpart, the Prime Minister of India, in terms of, and one of the key outcomes of that meeting in terms of what our president had said is to say, how do we partner with countries like India so that we can be able to set up, you know, a medicine manufacturing plant in Namibia? And if you look at the strategic interventions or plans that our president had, together with the president of Botswana, His Excellency Mavoko, is to see to it that the two countries collaborate. I've seen it, we have had in terms of the oil storage and many others. But it's quite also very unfortunate to see that as SADC countries, we haven't come together to set up some of the key plants that can, you know, be able to assist or to manufacture what is currently needed within, you know, these countries. So the creation or the establishment of, if it comes to fruition, and I believe it will become, you know, fruition, that India in Namibia sets up a plant that will be able to manufacture medicine and supply it to the public, you know, sector directly. So if we can pull our resources together with Botswana, I don't think it's something that we can be able to repeat after, say, 20 years from now. Generations that will be able to take over from there should be able to ensure that there is medicine part of, you know, the middle, you know, middlemen in terms of the supply of these resources. So that is one of the key things that we need to look at. But also, I don't think in terms of the Public Procurement Act, respective to each country, I don't think the issue is the middleman. I think it's also the issue that, you know, in terms of the procurement, whether it's the Procurement Act, whether I call it the procurement regulation, there's what is called planning. But also you need to be able to ensure that the prices, you know, market related. There is no way one can be able to say, I am approving, for example, Panado, which is costing $10. If I go into, if I procure it, you know, from the supplier, but probably with 20-15% increment, it's something that is viable. But if you can see it's costing $100, it's something that you need to, you know, red flag.
Exactly.
So to say, how can I procure something which I am buying in a market for $10 or 10 rands, but then somebody supplying it to me for 200 rands? So these are some of the loopholes that have been there for quite you know, a long time. But, and it's something that needs to drastically be addressed, and it needs to be addressed from the head of state and, you know, put a moratorium in terms of middlemen, so that until such a time, because we cannot blame middlemen at the end of the day, because they are in there to make business, And they found a loophole. And if such a loophole is not being addressed, it will continue to be, you know, as usual. So that's something that we need to look at and address.
Now, looking at Namibia and other SADC countries, Charles, what lessons can we draw from Botswana's health emergency to prevent similar vulnerabilities in our own system? And you did speak about the middlemen. As for me, I honestly, you did speak about, of course, some red flags will be there that should just kind of like close the deal altogether. But this is something that also we are dealing with. And I don't know how it's going to be done away with. Hopefully, it's going to be done away with soonest. But what other measures can we put in place to prevent similar vulnerabilities?
There are quite a lot of measures in terms of, you know, trying to avoid what is currently happening in Botswana. But the very same situation which is happening in Botswana, it's happening in South Africa, it's happening in Namibia, it's happening in Zambia, it's happening across, and I've seen it across all the SADC countries, including Zimbabwe. Some of the issues that we need to address is we need to have a resilient, you know, health infrastructures within our country or within the Southern African, you know, development community. And these are some of the things I suggest needs to be discussed, even at the SADC, you know, level. We couldn't only be going to SADC and discuss about security issues, but these are very same security issues that is affecting our people. If people, you know, there will be uprising if some of these things are not being, you know, addressed. And then we have the issue of, you know, transparent procurement systems. Are our procurement systems transparent enough? Do we have enough, for example, procurement, for example, of medicine is something that needs to be carefully, you know, looked at and analyzed, that even when an advert is put up there, it must be open, you know, open advertising, open international bidding, so that those manufacturers and suppliers of medicine should be able to be not only limited to Namibians, because we know there are no manufacturing entities within the country that manufactures those medicines. So it needs to be either restricted bidding to only to manufacturers that are supplying those medicines, or directly procured from, you know, those specific manufacturers. Those are some of the issues that we need to look at as a country. We shouldn't limit it to SMEs, you know, briefcase companies that have not even an office manufacturing Panado and so forth. It must be restricted bidding only for those companies that are in the sector. And I'll take a good example of that is if you look at NamPower, for example.
Yeah.
They don't procure transformers from just ordinary, especially industrial transformers. They don't procure it just from any other SMEs. It's quite very restrictive. Only manufacturing companies are allowed to bid. If you are not, then they are sorry. So we need to take similar aspects from that. So if the Minister of Health and other, you know, public entities in procuring key medicines from, you know, for our country, then we need to take, you know, examples from, you know, companies like NamPower and others.
Now, Charles Kakur, what do we say about President Duma Boko coming out publicly to declare a state of emergency in terms of the public health of Botswana? I mean, this is a crisis, and I appreciate how you rightly pointed it out, and I will second that to say that this is a crisis that many, especially African countries, are facing. But then again, often than not, the truth is always thrown under the rag. And then we have seen media houses cover stories on how essential medicines are out of stock in our own hospitals here in Namibia. But of course, we do have people coming in and painting another different picture, making it like we have everything together. Could this crisis serve as a turning point for the region in how governments balance health financing and economic diversification, as well as governance, and also just what does it say about the president itself, and what can other maybe African presidents learn from President Duma Boko?
One thing that we need to look at is, and I've heard it from many other, you know, political commentators, political scientists in terms of, as well as economists, you know, various economists have said, one of the key issues which is affecting the African, you know, nation is the issue of inflation. And most of the time, it's a result of, you know, different currencies and so forth and so on. My suggestion is to, first of all, as such a country, maybe we need to come together or to have, for example, pooled procurement. You know, if Botswana and Namibia are buying medicine, then we can be able, maybe, for example, to pull our resources together and procure as countries. But also, in terms of His Excellency, the President of Botswana, I think he's done quite a very commendable job to declare it as a state of emergency. So the nation needs to be informed and be aware of what's happening. And my suggestion is also to call on the private sector to come on board and assist in that, whether it's through various supply chains. All sectors, all players within this, you know, the economy must come together and see to it how we can be able to rescue the situation. At the end of the day, it is all of us. Everyone will be affected. So that's one thing the president has done. So the second thing is I've seen or I've heard about the president, you know, instructing the Minister of Defense to lead at that. So it's quite very commendable. If the channels within the respective ministry, for example, the defense ministry is quite very transparent, then it's something that we really need to do because they have to be at the forefront when the nation is in a crisis. That's one of these, you know, arms of the state that needs to come in and assist in procuring that. But if there are elements of corruption within, you know, that, then it's something that needs to be looked at. But I am quite very, you know, sure that it's the right step that the president has taken to ensure that medicine is supplied, you know, on time, to ensure that, you know, services is back, you know, to its glorious days, as it has been, especially in the early days, and so forth. So I think those are some of the issues that we can be able to look at. But also, quite very important, I think we need to diversify our revenue streams. So we shouldn't be relying only on diamond and other, you know, mining sector. The same thing is currently happening currently in Namibia. Our diamond sales have, you know, dropped, and that's going to have huge impact on our fiscus. So services will be impacted, job losses, and so forth and so on. So at the end of the day, people are not going to afford private, you know, sector services, but will resort to government hospitals and so forth and so on. And queues will pile up. And that's not something that one to see.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that I do take away from this is the fact that the president was very bold, knowing that, of course, there were going to be critics out there, but the fact that he declared this as a state of emergency with what's being on ground within his country is something really commendable. Thank you so much, Charles, for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks to the listeners.
Okay. Welcome back. On the Radar News Analysis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm all good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. My take on the declaration of lack of medicine, the state of emergency, whatever, it's all over Africa. Not only Africa, they're all out, let us be honest. You know what happened, eh? What has happened? The biggest problem we have made, all of us as a collective, those who started it and...
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750 ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99.
1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 High Baby Active diapers at only $124.99. See all our Real Value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
I sincerely apologize for that. Please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the problem we have done as a collective is, one, to privatize healthcare. Two, privatize education. Three, privatize agriculture. These three sectors must not be privatized, must be taken care of by the government. Let's start with healthcare. Healthcare is about the population and the animals that lives within that territory, whatever, or everything that lives within the continental shelves of all the states or the whole world. Why am I saying so? Because if government was supposed to be the only driver of healthcare, simply means all doctors, whether you are from whichever country, from whichever university, you work for government. And when you work for government, you're not working for government. Who is government? Government is the people, including you, who is a doctor. You understand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you are not there to make money. You are there. It's a calling. Doctor, education, these are callings. These are not professionals where you should go and make profit. You know? Because it's nature that dictates how things should happen, especially in healthcare. You don't decide which disease will come tomorrow, or which building or who should get sick. You understand? It's a natural phenomenon. So no money must be made. So government will be taken care of. She must take care of that. Mm-hmm. So which means all the money we pump into private hospital or private health care, it's now isolating. Because what you have done is we want to take care of little people, few people in the population-wise, and neglecting the masses. So what happens then? Then the let's say 90% of the population is on public health care, where there is no, which is not funded well, not only funded well, not run well, not only not run well like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the same private doctors and private hospitals and private whatever, they are also stealing from the state.
Actually, mm-hmm.
Yes, they are. Look, these people, these are doctors. Some medicine are very expensive. Ask any private hospital that takes care of TB treatment. Give me one in Namibia. Give me one a private that takes care of TB treatment. Maybe you should go find out and you come to the nation and tell them, right? No.
Let's talk about the more practical example of corona. Do you know that during COVID-19, there was no private hospital taking in COVID-19 patients, but they were rather sent to the state?
Yes. So why can't we fix where we know this is the only thing that will take us in the times of when everybody rejects us? Yes, Parliament must go and pass the law. No private hospital, no private whatever. You will see that these doctors will be working for government. So no one is going to be allowed to open a private practice. It's not for business. Healthy is not for business. You're playing with people's lives.
Mm. And you know what's actually truthful on ground? Private doctors charge the government lots of amounts, exorbitating amounts.
Yes.
And I mean, they are, of course, depending. Without the government, I don't know if they will be able to continue with the few patients that they may have. But then, you know, they charge so much money, which is so bad.
Go to any private hospital in emergency state, a person coming from an accident. Critically, you can see this person needs life. First thing, people will be asking you how much, which type of medical aid you have.
Exactly.
How do you play with someone's life? You see, so the state, every government, I think this WHO must stop. I think if they are bold enough, they should come out and say no healthcare will be privatized.
where, be it wherever, America, right? Look where we call the communists, Chinese. The private hospitals don't do well in China or neither in Russia. Why? Because the state takes care of everybody. When you go to the state hospital, you are where, you know you are taken care of. So me as a worker, I should contribute to the state the same amount I'm contributing to my Medicare aid. If possible, let's contribute for that same amount for the coming 5 years. Mm. Then you see that money will be reduced with time. Everything will start flourishing. All these private, whoever, they will start dying one by one. And they'll leave. So, but the state must be bold enough to say, look, in as much as we have got this policy of openness and free market and whatever,
yeah,
there are things we should not do, play with, life.
Exactly.
Because my life and the life of a person who stays deep down, who have never worked before, my life and that person's life is equal.
I think if the state can be bold enough to cut off, of course, to stop sending its patients to the private, of course it has to start.
That's what I'm saying.
It has to start with the state upgrading.
Because look at how many millions or billions we have put into healthcare.
And that money can actually be used to upgrade our own local hospitals. And
that's
at the end
what
of the
I've
day,
said many times. I've said, I've mentioned these things. I said, look, let's take, for example, Napoteo or whichever. That's why, look, Bankmate died. What happened to those people? If the med guide is liquidated, what happened? All the people goes to the state. It's not so. So let's start there. We have got billions and billions of money in the med guide. That money, they tell us it expires. How can money expire? You get it? So the state must say, look, the auditors must go in seriously, and SCC must go and investigate all this medical aid. Secondly, SCC must go and start investigating all pension funds and see who is stealing money from the pension funds. Because companies go, they borrow money from the pension funds, they declare that bankrupt. The people, you know, the workers who were supposed to go retire with maybe a million above, they all end up retiring with a million less. Why? Because the money was mismanaged.
I hear you. Anyway, who are we speaking to?
The only thing we have seen is GIPF, because government is bored enough sometimes. Eh? People, they go and investigate government. Come to other private medical aid, pension funds. Go in there. You see what is happening in there. It's a rot.
Yes.
That's why you see that some people have been on those. Ask the medical aid fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they allow certain people to be on the trustee, board of trustees, whether Renaissance or whichever, NHP, go find out. You find that the same people have been, some of them, they have been overstayed there in those medical aid.
Okay.
In those pension funds. Why?
There's
something they are keeping so that it should not be known by the government.
I hear you.
It's not that we have got a board government today that comes out, even Botswana. You see, the leadership of today is the leadership that speaks to the people, because this leadership understands why they are there. They are not there for themselves. They are there for the people.
Okay. But thank you so much for your contribution, sir. Who am I
speaking
to? Thank
you a lot. But I think let's just go in and say the government must be, parliament must be tasked. We are going to vote for them next time. They should go there and tell us that they should abolish private. Everything should go to government. Let all of us suffer in government and see if it's not going to be fixed.
Okay. I appreciate
all
your
of
contribution.
Us, white, black, carrot, the same way we do it with the TB treatment. If they are saying it can't be done, let's go to TB treatment. Find how many people are there. White, black, they are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So it can be done. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Now, should you be interested also in airing your opinions and contributions, 083-288-401 is the number that gets you in studio. Now, of course, we are joined by a medical doctor, Dr. Kasekere Andreas. Good afternoon, doctor, and welcome to On The Radar News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for the welcome.
Of course. Of course, today we are comparing the situation in Botswana as Botswana's president has declared a state of public health emergency in regards to procurement issues in terms of essential medicine and essential medical supplies. Now, this story resonates quite close to home. What do you say, Dr. Andreas?
You know, what Botswana is currently going through is a crisis that we can say affects almost all of the African health systems. Maybe others perhaps haven't been as bold as him to bring it out to the public internationally, but I can say it is something that we're also facing in our very own country. You know, we get times when you prescribe certain medication, the patient goes to pharmacy, patient is sent back to you, and the pharmacy informs you that that particular medication you have prescribed is out of stock or currently unavailable, and then you have to look for alternatives. You know, sometimes it's not just any medication. It's critical medication that the patient actually needs. It's something that they can't do without, understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it's really a crisis. It also reflects on us as a country. I think it's something similar to what we are currently going through in Namibia.
Imagine. Doctor, how does this make your work? Of course, having to prescribe medication for a patient, only for the patient to go to the pharmacy and then to get a call that you need to write up another medication. Apart from, of course, prolonging treatment on one patient and other patients still continuing to be in the line, how does it make your work overall, having to now have to come up with another medication and then look at the side effects that won't then come up on this particular patient? How does just that work?
In all honesty, it's quite frustrating, I must say. Because just a few days ago, I had a patient that they went to pharmacy and they got sent back to me because the medication wasn't in stock and they had to travel to a different hospital to go and look for that medication. You know, the public out there has this notion that people within the health system are actually stealing medication and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient was frustrated. They started complaining and all of these things. You know, this is just from the patient's perspective, but for me as a practitioner, it makes my work difficult. Because now, first of all, we have to understand that when we select medication, we weigh the risks against the benefits. We try to pick what the guidelines recommend as the first-line medication.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, this is a medication that runs out of stock very often. So it makes my work difficult because now, instead of giving what the patient actually needs, the best medication that the patient needs, I have to look for alternatives, and those alternatives obviously come with their own side effects and things like that.
Yeah.
Usually the safest medication is the one that is first line. So when I look for alternatives, it's really sort of like there's nothing much I can do, so I just tend to that as a last resort. It makes my work difficult, and then it also means more monitoring because there are certain medications that require more monitoring compared to other medications. You know, some work faster than the other medications. So really, it prolongs the whole treatment course. It leaves the patients frustrated because it's also a thing of cost effectiveness. You know, you're asking the patient to take a taxi every day to come and look for medication that is not there, and they must get another taxi to a different hospital to try and get another medication. Perhaps when they get there, it's still out of stock there. You know, it affects both me. It affects the patient. On my side, it prolongs my treatment. It affects the way in which I manage the patient. There's only so much I can do, but if the medication is not there, honestly, it leaves me frustrated as well because I'm not working to the best of my abilities.
Exactly.
Sort of like my hands are tied. I am limited. Yeah, it really frustrates everyone, the patient, the doctor, everyone in the health system.
Now, before we address the next question that I do have for you, we just have a scheduled commercial break that is coming up. Just kindly stay on the line and we'll be back to continue.
All right, sure. Thank you.
Okay, Doc.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Good
Get your monthly essential products for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 cubes of Sugar King white sugar, Top Score Super Maize meal, and the Buck Pro Fat Cook flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King, as well as 500 grams Pasta King pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save, I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
And we are back. Dr. Andreas, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spoke about first line of medication being the one to be first out of stock. Now, I want to find out, is there a relationship between procurement stores and those that are on ground? By those on ground, I'm talking about doctors, nurses, healthcare providers, that they're not dealing with the equipment that know which one is more essential, which one is more... What is it? The one that is more in demand, on which patients require more of this particular medication. Is there perhaps that relationship with the procurement board to see perhaps let's stock more of this particular medication and less of this one?
I'm not quite sure how they decide which medication gets ordered more compared to the other one. But what I do know is that we do have a medicines regulatory board, and I believe these are the people that recommend the medications which are in the name list and the medication that needs to be procured for that particular time period. But in any case, I think that there has to be some sort of communication between the procurement board and the medical doctors on the ground, the pharmacists, the people that are actually dealing firsthand with the patients. Because we know much more which medications frequently run out of stock compared to the other ones. So I think there has to be that channel communication. We have to be able to give feedback to the procurement board to say, this is what we need, this is what we should order in such and such quantities. I think a few days back, when the president spoke on Her Excellency on her first nation address, mm-hmm. marking 100th day as the president, she mentioned something about removing the middleman within the procurement process. And I think that's a very good move. It's a step forward in trying to solve this problem. I think if we can get rid of the middleman and we get our own minister or whoever it is that is delegated to be able to buy these medications directly from the supplier, I think we can cut short all this bureaucracy. We can actually get medications delivered faster, also at a cheaper rate. I think that was, for me, that was good news. And I'm looking forward to such a time when we'll actually be able to buy medication without having tendermen and middlemen in between.
You know what, speaking about middlemen and tendermen in between, one thing that really shocks me and surprised me is that a tender can be awarded to somebody who is pricing medicine 5 to 10 times above its original price. This constitutes as a criminal offense in the way you're looking at it on a natural, you know, ground. But it's something that they get away with, and I'm surprised that nothing has been done. And it's actually the same thing that Botswana is experiencing. What do you say about that?
Yes, I'm not sure whether it is a crime or not. I'm really not sure about that. But definitely, it's a crisis, like I mentioned. You know, it's a crisis that I believe... It's a good thing, actually, that we do have a minister who is a medical doctor, somebody that actually worked on the ground and knows what's happening. And I think if they can come up with a board that includes the actual medical doctors that are on the ground, I think we can solve this problem much faster. But I think the tendermen really have gotten away with so much. Of course, I don't have evidence to pinpoint who and who, but you can see the things from the outside, how the procedures are being broken, the protocols and things like that. And I think that is probably what has led to the president taking the decision to remove them from the middle,
mm-hmm.
yeah, from mediating between the government and the suppliers mm-hmm. of this medication.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've gotten away
with it for such a long time. Mm-hmm. But apart from removing the middleman, doctor, what is it that you also would then suggest maybe that will help also Namibia's health system in terms of procuring medicine?
I think if you're talking about solutions to this problem, the ultimate solution is obviously having our own medicine manufacturing plants and companies within Namibia.
Actually,
so that we are able to make our own medication rather than relying on exports and medication coming from afar. You know, it's, if you remember during the time of COVID, how the price of almost everything skyrocketed in a blink of an eye. That is what happens when you rely upon foreign, you know, countries to supply these things to you. Anything can happen in that country or on the economic scale at large. And that affects the price at which you get this medication and how we get this medication. And seeing that we are a low-income middle country, of course we will struggle to actually afford these things in the first place. And in the event that we do afford to buy them, getting them here and the quantity in which you obtain them might be another challenge. So I think
in
as a country, yeah, we can work towards that, towards having producing our own medication in our country.
Actually, economist Charles Kakuru, whom I also got to interview earlier today on this particular topic, spoke about Namibia then having, I don't recall the president saying it, but I think he said something like that of imagine India coming to plant a manufacturing plant right here that produces our own medication. And we have natural stuff that we can also use to procure our own medication. I mean, we have the devil's scroll that gets be exported to other countries, and we export it as raw material. Imagine we could now also be providing it to other countries. But that's a very good move. Of course, it may not start off right now, but getting on ground, the policies and it getting to be running, and eventually, who knows, a few years from now, Namibia having to procure its own medicine, it's something really that could benefit the country, hey?
Definitely, definitely. It's something that we are really hoping to see in the near future. I have hope. I believe in the current leadership, and I do believe that sooner or later, maybe we may not be able to build our own manufacturing plants in the immediate future, but definitely there is some hope. We will definitely see some changes with the current leadership.
You have a point right there. Dr. Kasekere, Andreas, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. We do appreciate your insights and also just sharing with us what's happening on ground as a medical doctor yourself working within Namibia Fertility.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Looking forward to having more of this. I think it's a good platform for us to actually express ourselves. You know, sometimes you're locked up in the hospital corridors and we never really get to express these things, and I think it's about time, and I really do appreciate, and I hope you'll have more of this and invite us some other time to discuss more of the issues that are affecting our patients.
Of course.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. You're tuned into On The Reader News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, of course, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly to tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Stay tuned.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back, and now for what's making headlines today in terms of trading economics. But before we get to that, let's compare the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, $1 today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 68 cents. €1, on the other hand, will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 62 cents. £1 sterling will give you 23 Namibian dollars and 89 cents. And $1 Australian equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. £1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 31 cents. And now for trading economics. India's BSE census closed about 0.9% down at
80,080.6 on Thursday, its lowest since August 8, and extending losses for the second day. Now, most sectors, including auto, IT, FMCG, and metals, posted declines amid mounting concerns about the impact of the tariff imposed by the U.S. on India. On Wednesday, the U.S. administration enforced an additional 25% tariff on Indian goods, including garments, footwear, and jewelry, bringing the total amount of levies imposed on New Delhi to 50%. Now, besides this, persistent foreign fund outflows also weighed on sentiment. On the data front, investors eagerly awaited the release of the second quarter of GDP data on Friday, with markets expecting growth slow to 6.6%, down from 7.4%. in the first quarter. Now, among key movers, HCL Tech, Tata Consultancy Services, Power Grid, Infosys, HDFC Bank, Hindustan Unilever, and CICI Bank were among the major laggards, with declines between 1% and nearly 3%. Now, Titan, Larsen and Trowbro, and Maruti led the few gainers. Retail sales in Ireland rose 0.8% month over month in July 2025, unchanged from the revised figure of June. Now, the increase was driven by faster growth in motor trades at 0.2% versus 0.8%, and pharmaceuticals, medical and cosmetic articles, alongside rebounds in food, beverages and tobacco, clothing, footwear and textiles. Belgium's annual inflation eased slightly to 1.91% in August 2025 from 1.92% in the previous month, marking its lowest level since January 2024. Now, the slowdown was driven by softer price increases in most categories, specifically in food and non-alcoholic beverages in July. Housing and utilities at 2.48% versus 2.77%. South Africa's PPI inflation accelerated to 1.5% in July 2025, the highest rate in nearly a year, from 0.6% in the prior month. Now, the main positive contributors were coke, petroleum, chemical, rubber and plastic products, which rose 1.3% and added 0.3 percentage points, and paper and printed products, which increased 2.5% and contributed 0.2 percentage points. Now, on a monthly basis, producer prices inched up by 0.7% after increasing by 0.2% in the previous month. Copper futures were steady around $4.4 per pound mark since its record-setting single-session plunge of nearly 20% in the late July, after U.S. government removed refined copper from its tariffed good list. And of course, the U.S. government had threatened to place a broad tariff on copper goods, but changed policy last minute to only apply to imports of semi-finished copper products in wires and pipes. Therefore, purchases of ore, cathodes and concentrates were waived from taxation among the main materials that are imported by the U.S. The move triggered a record-setting sell-off in copper futures of nearly 20% within the session. Now, of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. And soon afterwards, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a...
What does financial inclusion look like in Namibia and Africa at large? Tune into Financially Included, where money meets access. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. live on Eagle FM to hear about the different opportunities, services, and methods that foster financial inclusion in the country and the continent at large. Financially Included, where money meets access. Proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia.
To broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We always start off regionally, then we move over to continental news and then bring you international news right after. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where the 2025 GEM Symposium continues, and it brings together policymakers, healthcare workers and industry leaders to discuss the future of healthcare in South Africa.
25 GEMS Symposium is underway, bringing together policymakers, healthcare workers, and industry leaders to discuss the future of healthcare in South Africa. The event focuses on finding ways to make medical care more affordable, accessible, and sustainable for everyone. For more on this, we now cross live to SABC News reporter Griselda Lewis. Good afternoon, Griselda. Very important conversation around accessible healthcare. Just share with us a little bit of what has been spoken of today.
And in fact, Mfundo, one of the presentations that was made inside was with regard to value for money. Now talking about access, affordability, as well as quality. Those are some of the key words that we've heard from the presentations inside. How do you make, healthcare more affordable? How do you make it more accessible? But of course, most importantly, it's got to be the kind of quality of healthcare that, users would be able to be happy with. So a number of the delegates that have spoken have touched on this, but I want to bring in Dr. Stanley Mulwabe, who is the principal officer at GEMS once again. We did speak to you, Doctor, a bit earlier on this morning. But a lot more conversations have been had inside. So there was a presentation about, members, putting members first. And this is beyond your one-size-fits-all kind of approach. Talk to us about the importance of that.
So, this is actually a question that we find faces us every year, where you find that members are different. You can imagine. We have 880,000 members or more and 2.4 million beneficiaries. Each and every one of them has got a different fingerprints, and the same with their health. So what then happens is that because people are faced with this choice on a yearly basis to say, can I afford to pay this option? This option is more expensive. This one is cheaper. What is it that suits me? And to make that decision, there's mainly three considerations. To start with, can I afford it? Because there is a cost to everything. Can I afford the option that I'm going to choose? The second thing, what is the status of my health? That's one other thing. And then the third thing, and which we probably don't emphasize, is the stage of life of each and every individual. Now, basically, a person, a newly married couple, is different from a young person who's just started working, no responsibilities. Right. So they take decisions differently. So those three are the cornerstones of deciding how much can I part with, in terms of a medical scheme. And creating value has been defined in many ways, but what we regard as creating value for our members is we really have to strive to make sure that the medical scheme is affordable. And it is a challenge, and but what we are saying is that there are many ways. Firstly, we must try and make sure that based on the cover that you have, it covers you for the best part of the year. if not for the whole year. But that also depends on your, how you utilize your medical scheme. That's a very important thing. And then also, you know, the options, when we decide on the benefits, we have to try and match them. We group them into five options, and that's important.
Sorry, doctor, before we run out of time, I just hear in my ear, we don't have enough time, but I want to talk about those various options, you know, at gyms, and, you know, how they designed. You did speak about them being tailor-made, dependent on which stage of life you're at, but just some of those benefits very quickly before we wrap up.
So that was actually the basis of my my presentation. I talked about the five gems, and the five gems are the five gems options. So Onyx is at the higher end. It is for our members who are older, they have chronic disease, and they are more likely to use benefits. And then we have Tanzanite One option, which is the entry-level option. It's more affordable, but it's aimed at those who are younger. They fall sick less, and they are less likely. So those are the ones that use less medical. So the Onyx option is very rich or comprehensive. The Tanzanite is basically basic, and in between you try and cover the different levels of needs of members.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Stanley Mulwabi. We know we had to get you out of the presentation, but thank you very much indeed for your time. We do appreciate it. The principal officer at GEMS, Dr. Stanley Mulwabi, talking to us about some of, you know, the options at GEMS. And while, of course, you know, you have healthcare that is expensive, they're looking at ways to ensure, you know, that those in the public service, which it covers, you know, would be able to get quality healthcare, and, of course, some of the options that will be tailor-made for them.
Police officials in South Africa discuss crime fighting strategies.
Day one of the conference opened with a clear message: organized crime is costing Africa billions, and no country can fight it alone. Acting Police Minister Professor Feroz Kachalia told delegates that illicit financial flows strip the continent of between 50 and 80 billion US dollars every year. He described crimes like drug trafficking, cyber attacks, and human trafficking as threats not only to safety, but also to economic growth and stability.
We recognize that transnational organized crime undermines development and corrodes governance by weakening institutions, fueling corruption, and diverting resources. It impedes our ability to achieve the aspirations of Agenda 2063 of the African Union and the sustainable development goals of the United Nations. This is why we are committed to working alongside our partners in Africa and across the world to find lasting solutions.
South Africa's Police Commissioner General Fanny Masemola highlighted recent successes, including the destruction of counterfeit medicines and narcotics valued at more than 420 million rand. However, he warned that behind every statistic are real victims, the missing, the exploited, and the trafficked.
Behind every crime stats lies a story of lives shattered, families broken, and communities robbed of their peace. We must remember the silent and anonymous victims, the missing, the exploited, the trafficked, and the vulnerable. Our duty as law enforcement leaders is not only to dismantle these criminal networks, but also to restore dignity and protection and hope to the people we serve.
Interpol President Major General Ahmed Nasser Al-Raisi told delegates that cross-border teamwork is already delivering results, and warned that innovation and stronger partnerships will be crucial in tackling emerging threats.
The results are clear. Over the past 12 months, Africa law enforcement has shown the world the strength of the region unity. Backed by Interpol support in tackling terrorism, cybercrime, financial fraud, environmental offenses, and serious organized crime. I want to congratulate you on the progress you made to date.
With nearly 200 law enforcement leaders from 56 countries represented, the Cape Town meeting is being billed as one of Africa's most important security gatherings this year. For communities plagued by crime, the hope is that collaboration here will translate into safer streets across the continent. Lopang Alamu, SABC News, Cape Town.
Zambia embraces AI and ed tech to transform learning and empower educators.
In collaboration with Bongo Hive, has celebrated its 10th anniversary by hosting the EdTech and AI Endeavor in Lusaka. Minister of Education, with his Ministry of Technology and Science counterpart, graced the event. Minister of Education Douglas Siakalima noted government's commitment to digitally transforming the education sector, while his counterpart said artificial intelligence remains one of the most potent tools that can deliver tremendous good in education.
The Ministry of Education has made bold and deliberate strides in advancing education in the digital age. Our unwavering commitment to the education for all policies and the 2022-2026 strategic plan underscores our vision of ensuring that every learner in every province has access to high-quality, inclusive, and equitable education.
AI remains one of the most important tools that can deliver tremendous growth in education. In order to deliver digital infrastructure as a sector, we have all agreed that we are going to elevate the towers that we have got to a minimum of 4G.
The conveners of the Indaba explained the impact of their digital solutions in the education sector.
We have reached over 54,000 learners in Zambia and employed over 144 young, out-of-school young people, giving them a pathway to meaningful work, and the results are clear.
So we see the urgency reflected in classrooms where in some districts, single teachers are responsible.
Kenya Airways revenue drops 19% in first half of 2025.
Now to some corporate news. Kenya Airways has announced losses in the first half of this year. It is a marked turnaround from last year's return to profit. The airline posted an operating loss of about $47 million compared to an operating profit of $10 million in the prior period. It also posted a loss of about $92 million compared to a profit of about $4 million reported in the prior period. Now, revenue declined 19%, reflecting a 14% drop in passenger numbers and also a 16% reduction in available seat capacity. Now, the airline said the first half of the year was marked by operational and financial challenges, including the temporary grounding of three of its Boeing 787-8 Dreamliner aircraft, which represented about 33% of the airline's wide-body fleet. Now, this was all due to global supply chain disruptions and also engine availability constraints, it says. Well, earlier I spoke to the airline's group managing director and CEO, Alan Kilavuka, to get more insight into these numbers.
The main driver is constraint when it comes to capacity. So last year, we were flying at full capacity. Unfortunately, this year, first half of the year, we've experienced significant capacity constraints. You mentioned that we are down 19%. In fact, if you could translate that into actual numbers, you'll find that we have about 17 billion Kenya shillings down in terms of revenue number.
All right.
And that can be traced directly to a capacity constraint. Our wide body fleet, we had three wide bodies that had been grounded last year because of engine and spare parts shortage. And we also had four of our narrow body fleet also out of action. So in totality, we had approximately 20% of capacity shortfall.
I'm just curious, how much of these setbacks were as a result of industry headwinds or global headwinds? You did mention that your wide-body fleet was impacted due to global supply chain disruptions as well. Give us some insight into how much your bottom line has been impacted.
We had anticipated that we were going to grow year-on-year compared to last year by about 8%. But of course, we have, to your point earlier, we have actually declined by 19%. So there's a direct correlation between a decline in capacity, decline in profitability, and therefore an increase in the loss position that we've had.
All right.
But we think this is a...
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned now for the Voters Education Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katende. And of course, I'll see you again same time, same place. That is on Eagle FM frequencies, Eagle FM app or Eagle FM website at 1300 hours up until 1430. From Indafaya Pishuju, it is goodbye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a